Good morning. Today is Wednesday, September the 22nd. Joining us this morning from parts unknown, Michelle Bushnell. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Oh, if I knew, I could only tell. Or wait, something along those lines. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. What our question this morning? Why are tombstones placed at grave sites?
Well, the obvious would be a marker to inform who's at the grave site.
Yeah. You want to try the
unobvious?
Unobvious one? No. Okay. In very early times, tombstones were laid on top of graves to weigh down the soil and to keep the spirit in the grave from getting out. Later, when the stone was erected upright, it was used to mark the grave so that an unsuspecting stroller would not walk on the grave and become defiled by the spirit within, which at that time was believed to be impure. So,
well, I learned something today. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think about some of the old ones, like the royals and stuff, and everything's always horizontal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I was taught from a very early age that you don't walk on graves out of respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But that doesn't seem to be universally embraced these days by some. You see trails going through graveyards, and it's like right over people. And it's like, are you kidding? Come on.
Yeah.
But
no, it bothers me, yes.
Yeah. Well, are there many of the pioneer graves in southern Humboldt? I would suspect that there are.
There are. There are. Actually, my family owns, I came from the Harris area, and we have a family graveyard out there, which is locals from that area, and which you would call a pioneer graveyard, I believe. And, yeah, there's a lot of them around the southern Humboldt area.
Are they maintained?
Yes. So ours is maintained by our family, and we go and clean it, and, you know, we dig the graves for people and so forth. And then I know, like, out in the Petrolia and Matole area, out in those areas, Honeydew, they have those types of graveyards also.
Yeah, I think those are kind of cool.
Yeah, they're very cool.
Yeah,
it's very special to me that we, you know, our family is centered in an area that's our property. And you know, you can't just do that anymore. You just can't go bury someone anywhere. You gotta.
Right. Yeah.
They don't allow that anymore.
Yeah, if a Papstein showed up at your family grave, that would be a little weird.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, are there environmental concerns that you have to go through, or steps and procedures that?
Yeah, we still have to get a permit to bury someone, even though, you know, just because there is rules that you have to do. So we still go through those processes just like anybody else.
Yeah, I know every once in a while somebody will stumble on, or they wonder who is in this
yep.
one or in that one, or it's a shared. You know, you're driving down an old country lane, and all of a sudden, you can see, but you know the crosses are weathered, or there's no real markers,
right.
And you just
yep.
you know it's kind of a shame because you know at least you'd like to be able to know who was there or have some sense of for the respect side, but I suspect also that some of that is because there have been vandals in the past.
You lose that sense of history for sure. Our family graveyard is mapped, and so we have, we have every site is who it is and year they died and birth and that sort of thing. In case that marker goes awry, that we'll know and can replace or have the family replace. You know, there's a ton of history that goes along with graveyards that you lose if you don't keep up with it.
Do you have a little summary paragraph for each of the family members that are there?
So our family members are, we log into our family Bible and we do say a little bit about them. We also have a family tree that's in that Bible, so it kind of shows a progression of our family. So it is interesting. And each one of our members has a copy of that kind of family tree with a little bit of explanation. And my cousin did that for us, and it's pretty amazing, actually.
That's cool. Hopefully the kids will
mm-hmm.
all get copies down the road also and
yep.
continue
yep.
the family tradition.
Yep, the family tradition.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of neat.
Yep.
That's that stuff. I've done a little bit of work with the Myrtle Grove folks, and it's amazing how things get lost or the stories aren't there, but it's the trails across the the burial sites that bother me.
Yep.
You know, well, there's no need to do a whole show on why I'm exercised about that now, is there? do you sense that we're losing history? Just even Garberville, right? And the Garber family.
Yep, 100%. When I was a young girl growing up, and I was raised by my grandparents, so the traditions or stories, were told to me or, older folks tend to pass that stuff along. And I've tried to with my children, but you do lose it as you lose, unless you take care of it. One thing, grandparents don't seem to be as prevalent in people's lives as they used to be, and a lot of that tradition comes from them. And then just... people don't seem to care as much. I don't know the reason, but they just don't seem to care as much what the story of Alder Point was or what the story of, Blocksburg was or Harris or any of that. I think it, the change of times and faster paced, and so it does seem to be people just aren't as inquisitive as they once were.
Yeah, well, and I think, as you get further away, it's not as personal or... most times it's not as personal, but if some of the old wagon roads were there, identified as what they are, they may have asphalt on them now, but something that makes it a little bit more tangible.
That's a true statement. I was told my great grandfather's path because it was my grandfather telling me, and he was a postmaster and a stage stop owner in the Harris area, and so my grandfather liked to pass that history. It was his dad, and so it was personal, and it was personal to me because it was my great grandfather. But you are correct. The farther you get away, like my children, it would have been their three greats or four greats, and they just don't have the interest, although we go there to that area and I explain to them and they know it, but it's not as I met my great grandfather, I was five when he passed, and so I can remember him, but it's just not as prevalent in some people's minds of areas.
I wonder how many stories in the county that the county could be doing similar. I think of supervisors of the past or department heads and things like that that are there, but it takes a lot of effort to research it rather than just have it presented in front of you. So anyway, something different to consider as we go to a break. KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Michelle Bushnell. No more history lessons here. Let's talk about today, okay?
Sounds good.
What kind of issues are we dealing with the droughts now? I know that last time we talked, there were some special meetings that were going to be put together and some thoughts and kind of seeing what's going on. I bumped into, we stood next to each other and talked to Troy at the weather station a couple weeks ago, and he said right now it looks like we're going to get a wet winter. But where are we now? What are you experiencing?
So in general, from my district, I'm hearing that springs and waterways that have not dried up for many, many years are dry. I've heard wells that were producing that never have not produced or not producing. the concerns from the ranchers that I'm hearing are not so much water, but grass. There's no grass that because there was no rains in the late springs when it was warm, the grass didn't grow. And so they're having to feed a lot from the cultivators. The water, you know, the water isn't there that was there, which is new for the cultivators. They haven't experienced a drought year before since they legalized in 16 and 17. So at, you know, a county level, we're monitoring still. We're in a state of emergency. But I do hear, you know, I guess it's a perception of sorts, but in 58 counties, we do have a better county water-wise than some. You hear really devastating things from the valley and down in Southern California.
So as you look at some of the different challenges that are there, if we have a significant rain, let's say in the next 2-3 weeks or so, does that help out the ranchers that are looking for their grass? Is that too late in the season?
No, I mean, it could sprout. If we get a really good soaking, it will sprout some growth if the weather stays warm. I think the concern with most ranchers, or just my experience, is if we get if we don't get any rain until December, January, and it turns cold, it won't start any grass producing until
right.
spring. So then if we don't get any spring water, then the same pattern of no grass is going to happen. If we get a really wet fall, say, you know, I hear possibly some rain might be coming. So if we get a wet fall and it stays warm, it will start the grass sprouting. And if additionally our winter is warmer and we don't get as much cold weather, but we get a lot of water, that will be very helpful. I hear, I think through the Farmer's Almanac, that it's supposed to be an El Nino year, which would be grateful. But we also don't want flooding, you know, not from one extreme to another. We don't want that either.
Right. Well, you know, there's a long way between where we are and the flood. But there is that concern if it has been so dry for so long that the runoff percentage is going to be far
yep.
more than if the lands are a little bit more squishy.
We just need slow and steady. We need it to drizzle just a steady drizzle for the rest of the year would be fabulous with some warm weather. We need tropical.
Well, you know, as long as you're putting your order in, are you thinking like half inch a day kind of thing or an inch a day?
I would love an inch a day for the next many, many, many months with warm weathers.
Oh,
you know, you as ranchers, and I think every industry goes through this when it's considered a drought, whether it be in the valley where the produce is grown or cannabis or ranching with cows or hay production. I'll just use a rancher as an example. If you have 100 cows and your land can't sustain it, so you buy grass, at what point do you say, okay, I'm going to cut my herd in half because I can't sustain this any longer? And financially, it doesn't make any sense to throw good money after bad buying hay, which hay prices have went through the roof if you can get it right now. So, you know, in every industry, when a drought comes about, you have to consider that half production, whether it be produce or half production, whether it be cannabis, half production, whether it be beef. And ultimately, you know, that in return or in the end is going to affect the consumer financially.
Now, what are you hearing from the veggie stand, so to speak, in the Pepperwood area? Has it been a similar situation or are they having a bumper crop?
They seem to be doing fine. I've went to the corn crib there and bought some produce, and they have great stuff right now. I don't hear too much with the water. And honestly, I think next year, if we don't get rain this winter, is when we're going to be feeling it more than what we do right now. You know, it tends to do that trickle down. Like if we don't get the wet year this year, next year, the second year of a drought is more dramatic than the first year of a drought. So I think that's where we would see that in those areas where it tends to be a little wetter.
I would think that it's a bit of a challenge also because such a large percentage of Humboldt County's population is okay.
Right.
But,
yep.
But geographically, obviously, the large footprint is one that is having the issues. Is it
right.
Is it tough to convey that message through the county?
I think that it's tough to grasp the concept when you have, you know, like Ruth Lake is 89 or 90% full, and that feeds Humboldt Bay, you know, and so we have not an issue when it comes to, we have a lot of water up there. But when you look at the bigger picture, like what you just said, the footprint picture, we don't have, the Eel River is ultimately, I think we're on an 8-day low right now for, I don't know how long ago, years and years. And then you look at Klamath with the fish, you know, the fish things. So you have to look at that bigger picture, not just the surface water picture. And it is hard to grasp for some people. And then you have the, you know, you come in to, they see people irrigating still. And so that it just is a very...
Yeah, sometimes the visual doesn't really connect with the actual.
No, yeah, no. So it is, you know, when I look at in Southern Humboldt, where we're hotter than in Northern Humboldt, and the creeks are ultimately way lower than I've ever seen them, or the grasses, there aren't any. I mean, there aren't any down there. And so when you look at, and our region is different, you know, like up north here, you get a drizzle almost every day, a little bit from the fog. So there's still green up here, where in Southern Humboldt, it's bare, and it's brown, and it's dry.
And it's also 8:30. KINS News and Information Time. We'll be back.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Michelle Bushnell. Michelle, with the drought that's going on, with some of the challenges that are going on with at the state level as well as locally and federal, what kind of lessons are we learning? Is the county doing anything different, anything better than what it was before you jumped into the morass? Are you seeing that there's some positives starting to percolate on this?
Well, you know, it's hard for me as being new 9 months and what my role was before I was a supervisor and comparing it to now. I do see, half of the battle is thinking ahead and thinking about what we're going to do if this happens or we get to that point. And I do think the county is doing a good job at making sure we are covering our bases and preventative maintenance. I don't have a comparison because I wasn't in government previous, but I like to, you know, be able to say, okay, we've thought about this and talked about this, and if this happens, this is what we're going to do going forward. To me, you avert a lot of things when you have preventative thoughts and things set in place. So I do see us doing that quite often.
Well, are your constituents saying that they're recognizing changes? I suppose that's really where the impact is and the feedback can come from.
So some, but there are always, I mean, if I'm just being honest, there's, you know, government moves slow, and so frustrations are high with constituents. I guess that's honest, very honest reply. There are, the drought in my district, the drought is huge. Fire concern preventative is huge. Cannabis is a huge discussion with what they're calling the collapse of the cannabis industry. That has been for 3 weeks now, nonstop topic.
Now, is it a collapse? I was going to ask you about that because it seems to be mainstream. Is it collapse or is it the marketplace starting to reset itself now?
Well, I think if you talk to a cannabis farmer right now, they're saying that the market is collapsing financially as far as what the price points are and compared to what you need to get out of a pound, what it costs to make a pound and what you're selling it for, is the numbers are so close that yes, it's a collapse. It's not financially sustainable right now for very many people.
So now, is that a supply side issue or is that a demand side issue?
So in California, I think in general, there's a couple things you can attribute to. Consumer-wise, I'm hearing that California consumes about 2.5 million pounds of cannabis yearly, and I think California on legal market is producing about 6 million pounds a year, so you have overproduction, which drives the price down. And, you know, that's what I hear day in and day out. And then also the state, you know, was supposed to have a one-acre cap and honor small farmers for 5 years, which didn't happen, and you have huge, huge farms going on in the valleys.
Right. Now, is that the state ag folks, or is that the governor?
That's what they call the DCC. That was voted on through Prop 64, and I'm hearing right at the last minute, they kind of pulled back on that cap and pulled back on that five-year let the small farmer get ahead type thing, and so there was no one-acre cap throughout the state of California like they had said there would be. So you have farms that are, you know, in 50 acres, 40 acres, you know, huge farms, and those are being run like commercial-sized farms.
Right. Well, there was a belief that that was going to be happening. It's the fact that it's happening so soon that's causing consternation.
Yeah, it was supposed to be 5 years. Yeah, 5 years to allow the small craft cannabis farmers or, you know, mom-and-pop type farmers to be able to establish their pathways before corporate came in.
Okay, and that was just something that the state then is seeing dollar signs and is jumping to that?
Well, I'm assuming that it was driven by, yes, I would. Most things are driven by financial gain, and I would think that that would be the reason.
So something like that happens, in addition to the drought situation and the cost of water, are we seeing a reduction in the number of growers down the road and number of the illegal grows that are going on? Because, you know, Billy...
Well, not as of yet, but that would be... I mean, obviously, if you're having a drought and you have no water, then you should reduce, you know, the amount of growing going on. I would think in the valley where the water is... and I'm talking Southern California, middle California, the water is much more scarce there than it is here. But I haven't, as of yet, heard... this year that has affected anybody, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, that next year the drought could affect people hugely, and that would be one area where, you know, if your property can't sustain your cannabis grow, that would mean water, then you can't grow it. You can't legally truck in water. You can't legally bring in any other water except for what your property provides for or your permit provides for that cannabis. So if you don't have it...
You can't buy the water truck, guys?
No, you can't buy water for cannabis farms. Not in Humboldt County.
Just because there's a scarcety of water, or that's just how it was set up?
I think the thought, that's how it's set up, and I think the thought is that the property needs to sustain the farm, and that would mean water. A source of water.
Huh. Is that true with any other agriculture product?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't think so. I mean, you can buy trucked water, especially for, you know, potable water, drinking water. It's not illegal to do that if you run out. And I'm not sure about other ag industries, actually. I'll have to find that out.
Like corn? Or
yeah,
cucumbers?
Like corn.
Yeah.
Cucumbers, alfalfa.
Apparently, squash grows just... anywhere.
Apparently. And in abundance, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we could squeeze those things out and get some moisture out of that.
Yeah. Well, so one part of the task force that they, you know, in the ordinance, cannabis ordinance, if Humboldt County is declared in a state of emergency, they can curtail cannabis growing, according to the ordinance. That hasn't happened and now won't this late in the year, but it was a conversation that did happen through the task force.
That those could be put into abeyance?
Yep. I mean, we could say, they could have said, we recommend that no new planting after whatever date because of the drought. We didn't do that this year, but that's what I was talking about with things could, if we don't get some water, get worse next year, and part of it could be with the cannabis industry.
So it could be on the boards for next summer.
It could. Yep, it could.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Michelle.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly an American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Michelle Bushnell. Michelle, with the different challenges that are going on, water-related or not, are you seeing any changes in the 2nd District? Are new business plans, new businesses popping up to either accommodate, support, or to allow an escape from one business sector to joining into another?
I am not, as of yet. I have been talking to the business community a lot, and I know that money seems to be very not abundant right now, and especially in the southern Humboldt area, the stores are, I think, being affected by the lack of money in general and also the lack of workers. Every business I go to has a help wanted sign. So that is, you know, you can't even start a new venture if you don't have anybody to work the new venture. And you would think with maybe pathways drying up in other industries that you would have some workers, but we just don't seem to be abundant in that.
Well, I was kind of thinking about the transplants. I mean, we've been seeing and hearing and feeling an awful lot of the folks from other communities that, let's say, aren't quite as attractive as what we are, moving to Humboldt County and relocating, doing the telecommuting thing, or maybe once a week flying down to Timbuktu and, you know, doing whatever needs to be done. I was wondering if that's the case also in southern Humboldt, or if that's more around the bay and where the commercial air transportation is more readily available.
Well, I do know that in southern Humboldt, just like in Humboldt, we don't have a lot of homes available, and I am hearing from realtors that we are that people from outside communities are moving to our community, whether it be southern Humboldt or others, to do their. They realize they can telework, and so they're taking advantage of that. The amount of homes that are available would suggest that people are moving in. However, I don't see new entities starting up. So I think they're coming to our community and doing their telework and commuting when they have to.
Are you hearing anything about new development programs, communities, neighborhoods, cul-de-sacs, things like that that are normally happening in a community that does have the tight real estate market like we have?
I don't hear it so much in southern Humboldt. I do hear some in Fortuna, and I do hear some in McKinleyville area, but I don't in the southern Humboldt area, where we don't seem to have a lot of subdivisions down that way. It's more rural living.
Is there an infrastructure that would allow that to occur?
So I think there's areas in Garberville that can be built. In Redway, I don't think the infrastructure is there for the sewer and water to accommodate that. But I do think, from what I hear, there is room in the Garberville, Sproul Creek area, and the Bembo area.
So perhaps that's the next wave, so to speak, is to have some of those built out.
Yes. And as everybody in Humboldt County knows, there's always a shortage of housing. Affordable housing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say contractors and tradesmen.
Well, I think we have those. We just don't have the. I don't know what the problem would be sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes it's just we haven't done it. So why would we want to do it?
Yeah. Yep.
Change
is difficult in Humboldt County. People don't like it much.
Yeah, you've noticed that, huh?
I have. they don't seem to want to move forward.
No, that I think seems to be one of the biggest challenges we have. It's too often we seem to be our own worst enemy.
I will agree with that. Growth is something that is necessary for a community to be vibrant, and our communities. Well, I mean, I'm just speaking from my experience on the board. They seem to balk at growth in communities.
Now, is the Planning Commission expressing any comments up the chain, so to speak, to you guys?
They don't. So they don't interact. I haven't had a lot of interaction with the Planning Commission. I listen to their meetings when I can, but I, you know, so I don't know that.
So they're, maybe I'm on the outside, and that's where I belong. But I would think that there would be just some kind of, you sponsor me on a commission, I'd give you a little bit of an update every once in a while what's going on.
Yeah, I do talk, I do listen, so I can kind of know what's going on there. I do get emails sometimes from contractors that the commission can be difficult at times. I also get those same emails from cannabis farmers that, you know, you have to go before commission, and so that is somewhat of my emails, too.
Gotcha. Well, at least you're getting a little feedback, at least from one of your appointees,
yeah.
Huh? Good stuff.
Yep.
All right. Well, hey, appreciate the time. You know, hopefully the rains will show up and we'll start having wells being fit and well again.
I hope so, too. And thanks for having me.
Appreciate the time, Michelle.
Okay. Bye-bye.
See everybody tomorrow.